from London, BBC Caribbean Report.
Optimism in the CARICOM camp about meeting the challenges of the millennium. The business of extending trade privileges to the Caribbean stalled in the U.S. Senate and calls for the region to get its tourism act together. I'm Ken Richards and this is BBC Caribbean Report. CARICOM leaders coming out of their Shagarama summit believe they have laid the groundwork for taking the regional grouping into the 21st century. The plans include the revamping of the Georgetown-based CARICOM secretariat and assigning specific portfolios to individual leaders. Prime Minister Denzil Douglas of St. Kitts Nevis is due to take over the chairmanship of CARICOM by January of next year. I asked him what guarantees there are that those plans will be implemented expeditiously.
We have indicated that the time has come for the institutions, the important institutions of CARICOM, to be restructured, reorganized, so that they can have implementation effect. For example, the secretariat, as it is supposed to be creating an implementation unit to deal specifically with the single market and single economy. That is a specific decision to ensure that we no longer talk about the single market and economy in CARICOM, but that a unit within the secretariat will be responsible, working very closely with the person who has been identified to carry that particular program through, the Prime Minister of Barbados, working closely with him to realize that specific and cherished goal.
But revamping the CARICOM secretariat, assigning specific portfolios to individual leaders, how soon can these things be put in place?
This is already practically in place in some areas. As I said, the Prime Minister of Barbados, Owen Arthur, has been identified as the person responsible for the implementation, the complete implementation of our programs to realize the single market and economy. The Prime Minister of St. Lucia, Dr. Kenny Anthony, has been identified as that person who would lead us into the democratic changes that would be required to ensure that there would be good governance, not only in terms of good governance within the structures of CARICOM, not only within the two countries that we have political problems with at the moment, that is Guyana and Haiti, but to ensure that there is good governance along the principles of involvement of the civil society in the decision-making process.
But Prime Minister Douglas, these leaders themselves are bogged down by domestic issues and heavy schedules. Won't that affect their commitment to regional affairs?
No. I believe that the leaders have clearly outlined their interest and their commitment. I believe that the Prime Minister of Barbados, Owen Arthur, is totally committed. He has, to some extent, restructured his own domestic ministerial portfolio to ensure that currency is given and support is given to fulfill that commitment that he has made to bring the single market and economy in place with the assistance of his CARICOM colleagues.
Prime Minister Denzil Douglas. The prospects of a meeting between Guyana's two main political leaders remain remote despite CARICOM support for the move. Regional heads have endorsed a call for such a meeting to discuss some of the major issues troubling the people of Guyana. But Colin Smith in Georgetown reports that developments today don't give much hope that that level of dialogue will take effect.
In a communique issued after their recent meeting in Trinidad, Caribbean heads of government called on President Barrajagbeo and the main opposition leader, Mr. Desmond Hoyt, to meet at the earliest time without conditions. The heads say they are particularly concerned about the lack of progress with the political dialogue, which the two leaders agreed to in one of their peace accords. At a press conference this morning, President Jagbeo said he does want to meet with Mr. Hoyt without preconditions. He suggested that their first meeting could decide on an agenda for further talks. In response to this, Mr. Hoyt told BBC Caribbean Report that before engaging in any talks with him, President Jagbeo should first create what he called a facilitating atmosphere.
and there has to be some clarity about the capacities in which we meet. In what capacity is Mr. Jagdeo attending this meeting? In what capacity I am attending? What authority does he have? What authority do I have?
Mr. Hoyt proposed that President Jagdeo should, among other things, reconstitute the National Committee responsible for the distribution of land so that it reflects what he called a more equitable political balance. He also suggested that the government should release the report of an investigation into a failed government project. The next step in this crosstalk is for President Jagdeo, who wanted no preconditions, to respond to Mr. Hoyt's request for the president to first create an enabling atmosphere. This is something the president says he will do soon. Colin Smith in Georgetown, Guyana, for BBC Caribbean Report.
A proposal to extend trade privileges to African and Caribbean states has suffered a setback in the U.S. Senate. The bill would reduce or eliminate duties on a range of goods produced in the Caribbean basin. Leslie Goff reports that that trade bill is now very unlikely to be voted on before the Senate session ends next month.
The ayes are 45, the nays are 46. Three-fifths of the senators duly chosen and sworn not having voted in the affirmative, the motion is not agreed to.
The Caribbean and Central American Relief and Stabilization Bill had been expected to sail through the U.S. Senate, but now it's likely to be debated to death until the Senate session comes to an end next week. Supporters of the Caribbean and Central American Relief and Stabilization Bill failed in their bid to speed the bill through the Senate and into law before the end of session. Democratic Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan said the senators had let down the Caribbean and embarrassed the United States.
The Caribbean Initiative, Caribbean Basin Initiative, President Reagan's initiative, sir, gone. This is not over. It cannot be over. Do we have any idea what is at stake?
One of the most bitter opponents of the bill, Senator Fritz Hollings of South Carolina, said he hadn't been able to block the passing of NAFTA, but was jubilant that he'd helped to put an obstacle in this bill's way. But Jamaica's ambassador to the United States, Richard Bernal, said though things were not looking good, all was not lost. Though it's not impossible agreement will be reached on the bill, most observers believe it's unlikely that those for and those against it will be able to reconcile long enough even for the bill to be voted on before the Senate session ends in November. The BBC Caribbean Report, this is Leslie Goff in New York.
And you're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. The Commonwealth team that met with Pakistan's military ruler, General Pervez Musharraf, is this afternoon returning to London empty-handed. General Musharraf told the visiting delegation that he couldn't give them a timetable for Pakistan's return to democracy. He also refused to let them meet with the detained former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif. Now the European Union is to press Pakistan to return to democracy as early as possible. Orrin Gordon has the latest.
The Barbadian Foreign Minister and Deputy Prime Minister Billy Miller and three other members of the team of Commonwealth ministers did not get the timetable they were seeking. Instead, General Musharraf told them he wanted to revive the economy and clean up Pakistan's corrupt politics. Now it's the EU's turn. Their team will be headed by the Foreign Minister of Finland, Jukka Valtasaari.
The purpose really is to find out what's going on, to explain our position, which really has been explained in different declarations before, to assess the prevailing situation, in particular what measures the Pakistani government has in mind to restore democracy.
Mr. Valtasaari will be hoping that his team has better luck trying to persuade General Musharraf to let them see Nawaz Sharif. The Commonwealth team's double disappointment probably increases the likelihood that Pakistan will be expelled from the body. Already, they have been suspended and are to take no part in the summit in South Africa in 2 weeks' time. The other prime ministers in Durban will make that decision. There's another reading of the situation. A statement by the head of the team to Pakistan, the Canadian Foreign Minister Lloyd Axworthy, is being taken as a softening of their previous stance of pressuring Pakistan into quickly ending military rule. Significantly, he said that they sensed a strongly felt desire for change. That appeared to be an admission that there is significant popular support for the military coup.
And Canada's Lloyd Axworthy has been seeking to clarify that question. He admitted to being disappointed by the results of the visit, especially in terms of not having been able to secure a timetable.
It is disappointing because we think it would have made a big difference to the position of Pakistan in the Commonwealth. However, some progress was made, a beginning was made in terms of having benchmarks established, a commitment to move on an electoral commission, to move on establishing elections at the local level, establishing a civil administration, things of that kind. At least now we're seeing that there is some willingness to look at the move from a military regime to a civilian democratic one.
Lloyd Axworthy. St. Kitts Nevis wants to see its neighbors adopt a more holistic approach to tourism development. Officials there say the implementation of policies to develop human resources, protect culture and preserve the natural environment should precede plans to woo holidaymakers to the region. Bevan Springer in Bastia reports.
Its tourism week in St. Kitts, and although this twin island nation has only 45,000 residents, it hopes to take the lead in developing and implementing sustainable tourism measures in the Caribbean. Minister of Tourism, Environment and Culture, the Honorable Dwyer Astafan, says it's no accident that the ministries of Environment and Culture are linked to the nation's number one foreign exchange earner. He argues that without policies to develop both natural and human resources, the Caribbean, its beaches, and its brains will depreciate in value.
Most of the territories of the Caribbean, if not all, have gotten into tourism development. And I say this with the greatest of respect, almost on an ad hoc basis. Somebody wants to put up a $50 million hotel, sure, go ahead. What about training people? Oh, well, people can come in until our people are trained. What about food? What about provisioning of goods and services? What about increasing the local value added? What about bringing true opportunity for the people? Not just economic opportunity in the form of a job as a waitress or something like that, which is okay, but the full range of opportunities for the people to benefit from the industry, to contribute to it, so that it can be sustained and they can be sustained.
One highlight of this week's activities was a symposium for stakeholders to jointly develop strategies to ensure sustainable growth and a total quality experience for both the leisure and the business traveler. Meanwhile, the host nation for next year's Cari Festa, a regional cultural explosion, is currently benefiting from U.S. $125 million investments in the hotel sector, with another $90 million to be injected in the new year. Minister Astafan says these projects, which will add about 500 rooms to the island and potentially attract additional airlift, are green developments. Not only will they increase tourism receipts, but they will also be designed to be sensitive to the natural environment. Bevan Springer, in Bastia, St. Kitts, for BBC Caribbean Report.
Ebe Makadi, bonjour à toutes ces mounes kawaibla.
I'm wishing all Caribbean people a good day. I'm wishing them happy anniversary as Dominica celebrates its 21st independence anniversary. And I'm wishing them good health and a great life.
Bon santé et en bon vie.
Dominica's Chief Cultural Officer Raymond Lawrence sending well wishes across the region as the island celebrates what's now firmly established as Journée Creole, Creole Day. Mr. Lawrence told me the occasion celebrates things Dominican.
The dress, the cuisine, the language, the music, all the various Creole expressions so indigenous to Dominica is celebrated on this day. So you find people speaking a lot of the French Creole, also dressing up in the national way of Dominica, playing a lot of traditional and contemporary Creole music.
Are there specific highlights of the day?
Well, this year we decided to have a Creole dress parade with the school children of Dominica, and that worked well. We had about 300 school children dressed up in the national way of Dominica parading through the streets of the capital.
To what extent do these observances help highlight Dominica's Creole attitude?
It accentuates the fact that we have a rich cultural heritage, a rich cultural tradition, and that we need to maintain our culture, especially now that we've come to the end of one century and moving into another.
Dominica's chief cultural officer, Raymond Lawrence, St. Lucia observed its own Creole Day last week. International Creole Day is this Sunday. And that's it for today's edition of BBC Caribbean Reporter. Don't forget you can join us on Monday at 11.05, 11.15 and 12.10 GMT for our next morning programs. I'm Ken Richards, saying goodbye from London.